home the loss of the independence he'd enjoyed during the months of his last commission. Irritably, he took his hat and stole quietly out. The printer's messenger was waiting, hat in hand, in the hall. To him, Hornblower abruptly handed back the proof with a curt order for one gross of placards to be struck off, and then he made his way into the noisy streets. The tollkeeper at the Halfpenny Gate Bridge, at sight of his uniform, let him through without payment. A dozen watermen at the ferry knew him as the captain of the Sutherland and competed to catch his eye. They could expect an ample fee for rowing a captain to his ship up the long length of the Hamoaze. Hornblower took his seat in a pear-oared wherry. It gave him some satisfaction to say no word at all as they shoved off and began the long pull through the tangle of shipping. Strokor shifted his quid and was about to utter some commonplace or other to his passenger, but at sight of his black brow and ill-tempered frown he thought better of it and changed his opening word to a self-conscious cough. Hornblower, acutely aware of the byplay, although he'd spared the man no open glance, lost some of his ill-temper as a result. He noticed the play of muscles in the brown forearms as the man strained at his oar. There was tattooing on the wrist, and a thin gold ring gleamed in the man's left ear. He must have been a seaman before he became a waterman. Hornblower longed inexpressibly to have him hailed on board when they should reach the Sutherland. If he could only lay his hands on a few dozen prime seamen, his anxiety would be at an end. But the fellow, of course, would have a certificate of exemption, else he would never be able to ply his trade here, in a part where a quarter of the British Navy came seeking for men. The victualling yard and the dockyard, as they rowed past, were swarming with men too, all of them able-bodied, and half of them seamen, shipwrights and riggers, at whom Hornblower stared as longingly and as helplessly as a cat at goldfish in a bowl. The rope walk and the masthouse, the sheer hulk and the smoking chimneys of the biscuit bakery went slowly by. There was the Sutherland, riding to her moorings off Bull Point. Hornblower, as he gazed at her across the choppy water, was conscious of a queer admixture of conservative dislike in the natural pride which he felt in his new command. Her round bow looked odd at a time when every British-built ship of the line had the beakhead to which his eye had long grown accustomed. Her lines were ungainly and told their tale, as Hornblower noticed every time he looked at her, of more desirable qualities sacrificed for shallow draught. Everything about her, save for the lower masts, which were of English origin, proved that she was Dutch-built, planned to negotiate the mudbanks and shallow estuaries of the Dutch coast. The Sutherland, in fact, had once been the Dutch 74 Eendracht, captured off the Texel and, now rearmed, the ugliest and least desirable two-decker in the Navy list. "God help him," thought Hornblower, eyeing her with a distaste accentuated by his lack of man-to-man her, if ever he should find himself trying to claw off a lee shore in her. She would drift off to leeward like a cocked-hat paper boat. And at the subsequent court-martial, nobody would believe a word of the evidence regarding her unweatherly qualities. "Easy!" he snapped at the wherryman, and the oars ceased to grind in the rollocks as the men rested. The sound of the waves slapping at the side of the boat became suddenly more apparent. As they drifted over the dancing water, Hornblower continued his discontented examination. She was newly painted, but in as niggardly a fashion as the dockyard authorities could manage. The dull yellow and black was unrelieved by any white or red. A wealthy captain and first lieutenant would have supplied the deficiency out of their own pockets and would have shown a lick of gold leaf here and there. But Hornblower had no money to spare for gold leaf, and he knew that Bush, who kept four sisters and a mother on his pay, had none either, not even though his professional future depended in some part on the appearance of the Sutherland. Some captains would, by hook or by crook, have cozened more paint, gold leaf too, for that matter, out of the dockyard, as Hornblower ruefully told himself. But he was not good at cozening. Not the prospect of all the gold leaf in the world could lead him to slap a dockyard clerk on the back and win his favour with flattery and false bonhomie. Not that his conscience would stop him, but his self-consciousness would. Someone on deck spied him now. He could hear the pipes twittering as preparations were made to receive him. Let him wait a bit longer. He was not going to be hurried today. The Sutherland, riding high without her stores in her, was showing a wide streak of her copper,